Hey, baby, this is the vainglorious and notorious Mr. Big Drip Energy Paragon, and you are listening to Wrestle Horror Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror.
Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meet Hook Jim here, the Wrestle Horror Podcast. With me, as always, my co-host, Donnie Hoover. Donnie, what's going on, man?
Oh, not a whole lot. It's Easter weekend, so we're kind of trying to take some time off, but it isn't working out too good for me. And just looking behind me, and my Pennywise's balloon is looking pretty pathetic right now. It's about the size of a grapefruit, so I'm just going to let it deflate all the way before I put a new balloon in there. So how about that?
Joining us on this episode, the Walking Apocalypse Paragon. How are you doing, my friend? It has been too long.
I am feeling vainglorious, baby. Thank you for asking. Thank you for having me. And it really has been too long. I want to say the last time I saw you may have been November of 2018.
That sounds about right.
I want to say myself versus Aaron Williams, I think, was the last time I laid eyes on you, brother. So it's been too long.
It has been. It has been. You were one of the first people that I met when I got into this crazy business. You walked right up to me and introduced yourself, and it's just gone from there, man. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, man. And I mean, one of the ways that I was not only brought into this world with my upbringing, but also trained is, you know, when you see somebody, you greet somebody. You know, a lot of people sometimes want to know who you are and know what you're about first. Nah, sometimes you just need to say hi. Sometimes you just need to introduce yourself. And you seem like a pretty good dude, a pretty big dude. You tall. And so I was like, hey, let me go say hi to this person. He looked a little bit lost. I want to see if I could help him out. So I just wanted to say hi and welcome you.
Well, you certainly did that. And I'm 6'4", for those of you that don't know me. So, yeah.
He looks bigger than 6'4", by the way. He says he's 6'4". And I was like, man, you make my neck hurt. I need to come down a little. Just squat. Squat. Okay, that's better.
So where we met was at a new Ohio wrestling show. And let's talk a little bit about Paragon and how you got started and how you ended up in NOW and all these other promotions you've been working for.
All right. Well, if it comes to how I got started with wrestling, I graduated from college in 2017, May of 2017. And my mom did not want me wrestling. She loathed the idea. She kept thinking it was going to be this phase I would grow out of until she checked my search history when I was in high school, thinking she was going to find something naughty, but instead found tuitions for the different wrestling schools throughout the U.S. And she goes, oh God, I got to stop this. I think she would have rather I've been looking up something naughty instead. So she sat me down and was like, look, I'll make a deal with you. You give me 4 years of college and I'll support whatever you do. So I graduated from college in May of 2017. And I started my training at the House of Truth in September of 2017. Which it was an amazing experience. 4 days a week, 12-week courses, having, you know, TV names or former TV names and legends and icons come in, you know, having the likes of Rhino come in during training and the Motor City Machine Guns and Jimmy Jacobs. It's amazing when you have some of these people coming in and out, because, you know, when you're young and you haven't really had the chance to, you know, meet anybody or do anything yet, you're like, man, these are people I looked up to. These are people I got to watch on TV, and they're just in here giving me advice on how to be successful. So that's really dope. And then before I actually left training, and I want to say like it was a week before I left training, I reached out to a couple of wrestlers. I did the same thing before I started training, but I reached out to a couple of wrestlers for advice, you know, like, hey, I'm going to be young in the business. I'm first starting off. Is there any advice you could give me or any advice you wish was given to you when you were first starting off in the business? And guys like Silas Young and rest his soul, Shad Gaspard and Shane Taylor and Keith Lee, they gave me some really, really amazing advice, as well as guys like Congo Kong and Sam Knight. Like, there's some people gave me some really good advice that they, and also the things they didn't have to, you know, these guys had busy schedules. Some of them were on TV, about to be on TV, were on the road traveling. They had their own stuff going on. And yet they took time out of their day to give me advice. And it's advice that's kind of stuck with me to this day. It's advice that has been paramount in my career. And so I finished my training the day before Thanksgiving of 2017. And a few weeks later, I made my professional wrestling debut for a company that no longer exists called IWA Ohio. And it's kind of just been history after that. You know, I just kind of hit the ground running. I didn't want to take anything lightly. I had big goals and big dreams, and I just kind of went for it. With NOW, with New Ohio, it was kind of interesting how that happened, because I have a family friend who I found out is actually a distant relative, and he and I went to high school together. Granted, we didn't find out until after high school we were distant relatives. I believe his grandmother and my grandmother were his great-grandmother and my great-grandmother were first cousins. But we had no idea that we were even remotely related or anything like that. So we were just buddying up and hanging out in high school. Both loved wrestling and both liked basketball. And we were just blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, we're like, does this last name mean anything to you? It's like, see, because your last name means something to me. I'm just trying to make sure we know that we got this. Okay, I'm just saying. With one of the partners of the training center, Mark Koval, was family friends with his family, and they had like gone back decades. And Mark had run a promotion called Steel Domain out in the, you know, the western part of the Midwest. And, you know, he was also giving me advice and giving me tips. And then he was like, hey, there's a company here I'm partnering with in Ohio. They're about to have an event called the Arnold Classic. He's like, I could probably set something up where you can come on down and you can help out, show face. So that's kind of what wrestling is sometimes. Sometimes you don't always have an opportunity. Sometimes you don't always have a booking. It's just a matter of you go there, you show face, you introduce yourself, you pay some dues. And if you're blessed enough to have an opportunity, you get one. And I show up, and great luck for me, but terrible luck for him. The night before, Aaron Williams gets hurt. And so when he gets hurt, I get his spot in the Arnold Classic. And that was definitely one of those like thrown into the fire type things, because at that point, I was maybe six matches in the business. And so I'm six matches in the business going up against the likes of, you know, Robbie Starr and Jock Sampson and, you know, Warhouse, which back then they weren't Warhouse, you know, they were Warhorse. Mm-hmm. So going up against Warhouse and Victor Benjamin, who back then was Shane In Your Face. So it's like having this whole like weekend of just grueling tests of, can I hang with these people that are 3, 5, 10, 16, 20 years in the business, and then being pulled aside after every single match and having someone say like, Jock, boy, you lying to me. There's no way that you're only few days in the business, because you ain't done nothing but a cup of coffee if you only six matches. And you're going to tell me that you're this young. I could have swore you was about 3 or 5. Talking about you just a few days. Just, you know what, babe, you got something. Just keep your head on straight and keep it on a swivel, because some people are not going to like how good you are so young. Which, you know, also was some advice I wish I would have took from heart from him, because you really don't realize if you, and this isn't me trying to toot my own horn, but this is also any young guys that are watching this in wrestling. If you are very talented and you know too much than you probably should at a young age in wrestling, people are either going to not like you for it and they're going to bash you or try to maybe sometimes hurt you because they think they're teaching you a lesson, which what's the lesson they're teaching you? And then some people will take advantage of it. They're going to see how good you are. They're going to see the potential you have. and they're going to try to use it. Now, granted, you can argue all wrestling promoters use your potential, but some use it for good and some use it for self-gain. So that's one thing I would say be careful about. But after that showing, I would like to hope that I made a really, really good impression after that show, because Donnie kept welcoming me back and kept giving me opportunities, you know, and Mark was still in my ear, letting me know, you know, hey, make sure you do this, make sure you do that. I almost got in trouble, though, my very, very first New Ohio show, because I was writing to the show with Mark and I left the show with Mark. Well, Mark got to the show after the ring was set up. And then Mark left the show before the ring was torn down. And so
imagine that.
And since he was my ride and I didn't know anybody from the show, so I didn't know who lived near me, who'd be willing to give me a ride home. And also I was really new in the business. So like there were some things I kind of knew how they worked, but I didn't feel necessarily comfortable, you know, saying, hey, can I ride with you? Or, hey, can you take me home? Hey, where are you from? Are you near me? So right. I'm like, I know Mark. Mark drove me, so I'm going to just get in the car low with him, which I was also told, you know, normally the person you come with is the person you should leave with. It's a respect thing. It's a trans thing. And it's also a safety thing because, you know this person. Well, the guy who owned the ring that we wrestled in messaged me and pretty much chewed me out for not helping set up and tear down, and kind of told me that I had bad attitude and bad etiquette because of that. And once again, it wasn't meant to be the case. I was just trying to go with the person I was riding with because I didn't know any better. And I granted, I helped like set up chairs and stuff like that. And I even helped put away chairs. I just didn't help with the ring because I was trying to listen to my ride who said, we're going now. And he also was a vet. So I'm like, I'm going to listen to the dude that drove me here that also helped get me the job. I'm not going to try to cross him. Which granted, that situation also didn't hurt my booking because, you know, I got to come back again. And I'll probably say the Arnold kind of helped give me a nice little boost, because after I did the Arnold, then there were more phone calls. There were more people messaging me via Facebook, you know, asking, you know, hey, we heard about you from the Arnold. This wrestler said they met you at the Arnold, and or I saw the pictures from the Arnold, and, you know, started getting more booking opportunities and started, you know, trying to put myself out there more, which once again, mom was not a fan of it because she couldn't really see it. And that's honestly, it's great that she believes now, but in the beginning, like I'll probably say my first 2 years are probably like, though my second year was probably like my blessed year, because that's when I had the most opportunities, probably made the most money I made in wrestling due to no pandemic and a whole bunch of other stuff. Those first 2 years were the hardest years, because those were the years of making doubters into believers, you know. Mm-hmm. Some people in wrestling have a great support system. They have people who believe in them and want them to succeed, whether it's family or a girlfriend or whatever. I had nobody. And so I had to have a certain confidence in myself, because if I didn't, then I was probably going to break from the weight and the pressure of all those that already thought I was going to fail, or that wanted me to fail. Because I had definitely had family members who wanted me to fail so that way I would snap back to reality, instead of realizing this was my reality. And sometimes people confuse that confidence for arrogance and cockiness. They thought that, you know, I was full of myself. I got people now that tell me they don't like me because they like, when you were younger, you were so arrogant. I was like, nah, I just had to believe in me. That's all that was. I like a lot of stuff that people don't learn until year five. I was having to learn at year one, you know, about branding and about the value of where you wrestle versus, you know, how many times you wrestle. I had to learn a lot of things quickly. I had to learn that you have to have certain expectations, even of the place you wrestle for, because they have expectations of you. You know, they expect you to show up. They expect you to put on a good show. They expect you to show etiquette. They expect you to, you know, to be respectful and follow the rules. Well, then you also should have, hey, well, I expect, you know, for us to be in a safe ring. I expect us to be in a safe venue. I expect us to be putting out a product that the fans value, so they don't think that we're, you know, some yarder fed, or we're a show that makes them go, why would I want to come back here, and look at the wrestlers differently for even wrestling there. There has to be mutual expectations. And because I was a young guy that had some of those expectations, it rubbed some people the wrong way. But what's funny was when the veterans had the same expectations, it was like, oh, they're supposed to, because we should look up to them. And it's kind of one of those things of, it's like, well, aren't we supposed to then follow suit to the people we're looking up to? You know, supposed to be more like them and learn from that. So, but I didn't really have that support system going into it. I had to turn a lot of doubters into believers. And I can say for the most part, I did. I turned a lot of doubters into believers. But it was still difficult in the beginning because, you know, a lot of stuff I had to do on my own. A lot of stuff I had to hustle for. A lot of stuff I had to beg people to just rock with me. You know, give me a chance. Let me show you why I'm doing this. There's a method to the madness. You know, and some people now, they're like, man, I can't even believe I doubted you because you never really, you know, you always end up surprising me. Whenever I doubt you, you surprise me. And then I think, why did I doubt you to begin with? And then there's some people that, you know, they see the pandemic and what the pandemic has done to the world. And their response is, so, you know, you done with that wrestling thing now? Have you realized? And so it's been a bit of a obstacle, but I feel adversity is what makes us. You know, a lot of people talk about, like, you know, we fall down. But, and granted, as the cliche says, you know, there's a song, we fall down, but we get up. And I mean, but the thing is, that's the thing. Anybody can fall down. Everybody falls down. But do you get up? How do you get up? How long did it take you to get up? And then what do you do when you get up? You know, adversity creates growth. You can't grow without that adversity. A diamond does not become a diamond without the pressure that's put upon it. You know? Sometimes that pressure will turn it into dust and it won't get to be a diamond. But with the right amount of pressure and the right amount of resistance from that cold deciding it's not going to break, it's not going to bust, it's not going to just fall, it becomes a diamond. And I have, you know, even from the last time you've seen me, I probably changed up my look about 3-4 times. It's all about evolution. It's all about, you know, progressing through what you were. And that's not even a matter of, you know, changing who you are, because a lot of people feel like when you change a look, you change who you are, you're a different person. Well, you know, you're a different person today than you were yesterday, so you're always a different person, but you got to evolve. You know, like I said, you're not the same person you were yesterday, so that means you're not the same person you were last year, you're not the same person you were 2 years ago. You know, when Donnie and even you met me, Jim, I was one person. I was, you know, the guy who, you know, was hungry and wanted opportunities. And I would say in 2019, I was the guy who felt like he had the world at his fingertips. At 2020, I felt like I was the guy that got the world stolen from him, you know, got it ripped out of his hands. And now here in 2021, I'm like, I'm back to reclaim what's mine. You know, I'm ready to take what was mine and what will be mine, you know. And when I say, like, the world taken from me, like, you know, a lot of people be like, oh, this is going to be my year. No, 2020, I only have three free weekends the entire calendar year. I was supposed to go to 4 different countries and wrestle. I was supposed to go to 7 different states and wrestle. And those are just the ones that I was booked for. I was supposed to wrestle once a month for 6 months in Florida. Do you know how nice that would have been? Because part of it was during winter time. Right. So I could have wrestled in Florida during winter. Like, you don't, Jesus. So, and it hurts my heart just bringing it up. But at the same time, you know, you can think about what held you back. You can think about when you fell down. You can think about all the things that you don't have. Or you can think about, not only how am I going to get them back, how am I going to get better than what I had? How am I going to be better than I was when I had those things? How am I going to continue to evolve into the person that I am meant to be? Because I'm going to let you know right now, and anybody else watching, who you are right now, even if you're doing well for yourself, even if you're doing great, even if you're happy, you still aren't who you're meant to be. You're still evolving. You're still growing, because every day is growth. And if you're not growing, then you're not living, you know? And so you got to keep on evolving to who you're meant to be.
Yeah. One thing you're missing about people doubting you in 2020 is, you know, we also, you know, heard comments like that too, because we had a big year planned for 2020. But what's impressed me about everybody is seeing how everybody has pivoted to continue to either, I mean, there's more ways to make money in wrestling than being a wrestler. There's many ways, and just seeing how people were pivoting and the ideas they were coming up with to try to help promote themselves or recreate themselves or to bring in income when they weren't getting that wrestling payday. was pretty impressive to me. And I actually pulled a lot of ideas from just watching others and seeing how they were pivoting.
Oh yeah. And it goes to the hustle. A lot of wrestlers are natural born hustlers. I mean, we come from the carny business, which was a business full of hustlers. And if you can't hustle, then, you know, you can't make it. And so just because there was a shutdown or a pandemic, I loved seeing some of the people hustle. Like, I remember back during the, I want to say like late spring, early summer, we had promo competitions. You know, people were just saying, hey, we're using this to refine our skills. We're also using this to sell ourselves to people who may not know who we are in a certain areas and certain markets. And so we're going to put our promos out there so people can be like, oh, who's this Paragon guy? Or, hey, who is this Hollywood Haley J? Who is this, you know, Giuseppe Colon? Like, you're putting these promos out there, and somebody who may not know who you are in Ohio, but people who know who you are, you know, in this area, now they're like, oh, well, let me see about this person. Maybe I can even reach out to, oh, I see they're on this flyer. I know this promoter. Maybe I can ask them, do they recommend this talent or something like that? I mean, I agree with you. The hustle people showed in 2020 to me also showed me who wanted it. You know, there may be people who got it, but some of the people who got it and have it don't want it. And you'll see by how much they don't share flyers, how much they don't cut promos, how much they're not in the gym or a training center like, you know, we have going on, you know, bettering themselves. But then you saw people who, you know, gained weight to tack on muscle, or who lost weight to lose body fat. You'll see people who were evolving their wrestling game and trying new things that they never done before. You see people doing promo competitions. You saw people doing OnlyFans. I saw somebody do a cooking OnlyFans. There was nothing naughty or whatever. They was just, hey, you guys want to see how a day of meal prep and a day of cleanup is for me? Check out my OnlyFans. And they was over here just like, look at how I turn these mashed potatoes. And oh, what's that? Is that a pectoral muscle? Yes, it is. Now that match, like, you know, it wasn't even that crazy, you know, but it was that hustle. It's that gotcha that some people just don't have, and some people can't help but have. So I love seeing it myself.
Yeah. And even Facebook group Snake Pit Pro from Sim Bodhi, that was created out of the pandemic and the necessity to move on. And it turned into something epic. I mean, you know, there's a crap ton of information there, and people have come out of the woodwork to get on there and give their opinions and do some teachings and trainings and Q&As. And you know, just another example of something that if the pandemic didn't happen, maybe Snake Pit Pro would have never existed. You never know.
Oh, exactly. And to me, Snake Pit Pro was a blessing because I'm a huge Tyson Dukes fan. I didn't realize Tyson Dukes had a YouTube channel. Snake Pit Pro allowed Tyson to post his different videos where he shows, here's how you're supposed to do stuff, or the better way to do stuff. There's a lot of stuff that I do now, or like I feel like I do better now because of that guy, you know. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of his, and so I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for all the seminars and all the advice that was given. And not only that, but though the pandemic was rough and it hurt a lot of things in life are what you make it. So many things in life are what you make it. And during the pandemic, I found peace. You know, a lot of people don't realize this, but 2019, the very end of it, was a rough time for me. I was dealing with a lot of mental health stuff, partially because I had the world at my fingertips, but I had still a lack of support, even from people who were supposed to be, you know, mentors and friends and family. I had people that were mentally and verbally and emotionally abusing me and really making me question my self-worth. And so going into 2020, it was me trying to find my purpose. You know, why am I still here? Why am I here? Do I belong? And stuff like that. And the pandemic hit. And, you know, though it sucked because it felt like my career was skyrocketing in the right direction and it got halted by the pandemic, I got to be alone with myself, which is really hard for many people to do, is to be just alone with yourself and your thoughts. And so I just sat there and I meditated and I thought about life and I thought about what was important to me. And I thought about wants versus needs. In wrestling, I need to succeed, but I don't need wrestling. In wrestling, I want to be a wrestler. I am a wrestler. I want to be here in wrestling, but I don't want to be consumed by it. And once upon a time, I thought that consumption was a good thing. I thought, like, no, because if you get consumed by wrestling, you're a part of it, not realizing that consumption is eating you alive, you know, and it's using you for nutrients, but what are you getting out of it except for digested? And I feel like the pandemic brought me peace. It brought me clarity. And even in that, it allowed me to evolve. I got to evolve to the next step and the next version of who Paragon was meant to be. Because like I said, who you are is constant growth. You know, when Donnie met me, I was the demigod. You know, I see you got one of my shirt designs behind you, Jim. So around the time you met me, you know, I was the walking apocalypse. You know, around, you know, I would probably say right before the pandemic, you know, I was a combination of the walking apocalypse, but then I also was what I was calling big drip energy, you know, because I felt like I just exuded, you know, wealth and money and flex and flashiness. Then during the pandemic, that's when I became the vainglorious and notorious one. And even since then, though I am very still vainglorious and notorious, I've also got a new moniker, which is Drip Flair, because, you know, I still got that drip. I still got that flex. But at the same time, like, I will wear a suit and I will stomp you out with me and my boys and you ain't gonna do nothing about it. You know, we ain't four horsemen, because guess what? We don't ride horses. We ride Lamborghinis.
So, you know, you pretty much answered a lot of my questions regarding your character and the evolution of your character. I'm just going to ask it straight up. Who was your biggest inspiration when you wanted to get into wrestling? Which wrestler inspired you the most?
So that's kind of a two-part question, because the reason I watched wrestling and I fell in love with wrestling is The Rock. He's the reason I watched and fell in love with it. My very first memory is at 2 years old, my uncle sitting me down from Monday Night Raw and saying, you see this kid right here? His name is Rocky Maivia. And I'm telling you right now, he's going to be a star one day. And that was his debut on Raw, was my first memory. So he's the reason I fell in love with wrestling. To this day, anything he's in, I will support. I love watching Young Rock. I mean, I don't really fangirl over many things or whatever. But when I was in the Rock the Promo Challenge back when I was in college, like people that could, like, you got your promo so far, you got to actually meet The Rock. I was so hyped because I'm like, I get to meet my hero. Granted, I didn't get to make it to the finals, but it would have been really dope to, you know, do that. Cause to me, that was a big thing. But the reason I became a wrestler, the guy who made me say, hey, you can do this, was Eddie Guerrero. To me, that dude is what a perfect wrestler is and looks like. You know, he may not have been super tall, he may not have been super jacked, but he had the right package. He had the incredible athleticism. His promos were just immaculate. His character work and just his in-ring work is just mind-blowing. And the fact that if you look at his last, like, 2 years, he was doing all of that in severe pain. Right. You would hear stories of Eddie would show up to the arena, get a massage for an entire hour, go out and wrestle, come back and get a massage for another hour because he was in so much pain. He had to have them, like, break down the toughness in his muscles just so that way he'd be able to walk properly, you know. And he as a brown person, representation matters so much. A lot of people don't realize why, but when your superheroes and your lead characters don't look like you and you don't know necessarily where you fit, and when you do get to see a character that looks like you, they're normally a sidekick, they don't get to be the star, they don't get to be the main event, or you have to put us in a role that was originally written for somebody else, and so then we got to hear the backlash of that. You know, and then you also deal with, you know, like when I was growing up and we would play superheroes or we would play cops and robbers, no matter what, they always wanted me to be the bad guy. They always wanted me to be the villain. They always wanted me, or they always wanted me to play the black character or the ethnic character. You know, we'd play Power Rangers. Well, you're the Black Ranger. You know, even when I got older and black people started being the Red Ranger, you're the Black Ranger, but the Black Ranger ain't even black this time. Damn. You know, so it's like, so when I got to see moments like Eddie getting to become the guy, or seeing, you know, Kofi Kingston get to become the guy, even recently, someone like Bobby Lashley, you know, that representation, it allows people to, you know, go, hey, this is possible. I can do this. This can be me, you know, and that's a big thing with wrestling is the possible. I tell people all the time, my dream may be improbable. It may be illogical, but it's far from impossible because someone did it before me and someone did it before them. Well, the someone who did it before me when I was growing up was Eddie, because he was someone who showed me that you can be the smaller guy. You can be the brown guy. You can be the guy that has your demons and has all these things going against you. And you can still succeed. You can still be at the top of Zion, looking down the rest of the world saying, I'm the king of the mountain now. And his work ethic and his dedication has really been what has inspired me to kind of do what I do, you know. And I don't even just mean in wrestling. I've heard a lot of stories about the type of person he was outside of wrestling. You know, I heard there's a story where him and Chris Benoit, you know, they were having a really serious conversation and it was some really heavy stuff. And a fan walks up to Eddie and was like, hey, you know, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. And he's like, I don't want to autograph. He's like, can I just pray with you for a second? And Eddie looked at Chris and says, I'll be right back. And him and the fan went to go pray with each other.
Nice.
And hearing that, Eddie was in a really serious conversation. I believe they were talking about some really important stuff. And he's like, hey, I got to go take care of this, you know? Or Jimmy Jacobs, who came, you know, out of my school, who came out of my camp, told stories about how when he first had his, like, you know, his enhancement talent match for WWE was against Eddie Guerrero. And Eddie knew who Jimmy Jacobs was. You know, Eddie spent some time, you know, at ROH when it first was coming up. Eddie, you know, kept his eyes and ears out to the world of wrestling outside of WWE. And when he knew he was wrestling Jimmy, he's like, hey, man, look, I know this is how it's booked tonight. I know this is how it has to go. But he's like, I want to apologize to you right now because I know how good you are. I'm sorry this is how it has to be. But I pray that down the line, we're going to be able to do this again and do this right. I know we're going to get to do this again and do this right. There are so many people you hear at times where they treat enhancement talents like they're nothing. And so to hear that this guy who was just off of a WWE title run pulls this guy aside, who at the time was considered a nobody, at least in certain people's eyes, and to let him know, like, I know who you are. I know how good you are. I can't wait for us to do this the right way. And I want to say sorry that we can't tonight. Once again, it just means a lot. You know, it means a lot. It means a lot about who he is as a person and who we can be as people in wrestling. You know, I've always heard that this is a selfish business. I've always heard that, you know, this business is cutthroat and you have to be selfish to survive. And then I hear stories about Eddie and I'm like, why can't we all eat? You know, why can't we all make this place better for everyone involved? Why can't we work together as promoters and as wrestlers and as the crew and even as the fans to put wrestling back to what it was back when we had territories? And when people said my job is a professional wrestler, they meant it. It wasn't I'm a professional wrestler and this, or I do this during the week and I do this on the weekends, or I do this part-time. And like, no, like enhancement talents used to wrestle 5 times a week and make $400 to $600. You know, the bigger names in the card were making $1,000 plus a show. And they were also wrestling multiple times a week and traveling to different cities and different towns. But we can't get back to that because, one, we've had people kind of bastardize our business, you know, and hurt it to a point where we have to keep on trying to evolve something that didn't need to evolve to begin with. Or everybody wants to think about themselves. I mean, the last 30 years, and I'll probably say maybe in the last 40 years in our society, it's been not Gen Z or Gen X or millennials or whatever. It's been Generation Me. It's been everybody focusing on themselves. And wrestling is part of our society, so of course it's going to trickle down in that as well. And that's why Eddie was so important to me, because he was someone who was the outlier. You know, he was someone who felt we all could eat and we all could be successful. This guy was on top of the world and begged them to take the title off of him because he felt like he was hurting the company because they weren't getting the views and the attendance that they were getting, you know, when Brock was there. But granted, that's because Brock had just left. You know, he had had enough time to really do what he could do, but because he was so old school and he cared about the business, it wasn't about him. It was about the business. It wasn't even about the show. It wasn't even about the company. It was about the business because he didn't love his place in professional wrestling. He loved professional wrestling. And so there's multiple reasons why he is someone who, if it weren't for him, there'd be no Paragon.
Well, you know, I got to say, it's kind of funny that you mentioned Eddie Guerrero, and not funny, but now I live down in Hamilton. I go watch Future Great Wrestling most Friday nights. Well, they had this big tag team tournament, and the final match was a three-way ladder match for the new titles. And one of the teams is called the Bold and the Beautiful. His name is Jacob Rose.
Dick Rose and Shea Solo. Yeah, I know.
Jacob Rose got up on top of that ladder and did a picture perfect frog splash. And all I could think of was Eddie Guerrero. It's like, I've seen Eddie Guerrero do this many times. And what Jacob did was just, it couldn't have been any better than, you know, just slightly below what Eddie would have done. It was just amazing. I mean, from the launch to the landing and everything, it screamed Eddie Guerrero.
That's beautiful, man. I love to hear it. And I honestly feel like I have a weird connection with Eddie because for the last few years, I have gotten to wrestle on either the anniversary of Eddie's passing, the anniversary of Eddie winning the title, or Eddie's birthday. And every time I get to do that, I end up, there somehow gets to be an Eddie Guerrero finish. You know, like I was at a wrestling show and it was on his birthday. And I was actually wrestling one of my tag team partners and the referee is down. He grabs a chair and he's about to hit me with it, but he sees the referee is getting up. And so he puts the chair on me. He throws the chair in my hands and he lays down. So then I wrap the chair around my neck and then I lay down. And so he sits up, what are you doing? So he's trying to pull the chair off of my head. I'm smacking his hands and kicking him and then laying back down and playing dead. He's like, get that off your head, get up. And I stop it, stop, and lay back down. And then he finally pulls the chair off my head and he cocks the chair back to get it off. And the ref turns around, hey, disqualified, you know. Or, hi, buddy, this my cat, you wanted to say hi. and you know, I had another one where, you know, was in a tag team match and we were the tag team champions. And on the anniversary of Eddie's passing, we threw the tag titles into our opponent's hands and then sat down and pointed. You know, just a lot of Eddie finishes that, you know, I feel that were done correctly and would have made Eddie very, very proud. So that's another reason why I feel like I have a strange connection to him because it just keeps on happening.
Awesome. So, wow, we've been talking a lot about wrestling. Let's talk a little bit about horror.
Right on. One of my favorite subjects.
You know, as we were discussing before we went on the air, you quizzed me with what my favorite horror movie was in the past couple of years. And you told us what yours was, but, you know, going back to the beginning, what got you liking horror? I mean, is there any specific time or?
Oh, yeah. So, as I've said, in wrestling, I knew too much too quickly, and that's the same thing in life. From age probably 3 or 4, my favorite movie of all time was Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
You know, literally, if you asked me at 5 years old, what was my favorite movies? Silence of the Lambs, Space Jam, Flubber, Big Daddy, and then all of the Batman movies that had come out to that point, which at that point, I think the latest one was Batman and Robin with George Clooney. I didn't have great taste when it came to Batman movies back then. I knew Keaton was the best, but I liked the other ones because it was Batman. But yeah, I love Silence of the, and actually scratch that, Silence of the Lambs, and then Pulp Fiction. I watched Pulp Fiction when I was four, and I fell in love with that movie too. Once again, watched stuff way too early than I should have been.
You go around doing Samuel L. impressions.
Oh man, like. Like it got bad to the point where like I couldn't, you know, when you're a kid, you can't cuss in the house. And so I'd be over here, you know, trying to replace words. I'd be like, say what again? Say what again, mother father? they'd be like, what? You heard me, mother father. Does he look like a witch? If he's not a witch, then why are you trying to drown him like one? Why are you trying to burn him at the stake? This ain't the Salem witch trials, you know. I'm trying to change it to make it appropriate, you know, and stuff. You know, didn't really work. Still got in trouble because they knew what I was trying to say. but Silence of the Lambs. And it wasn't until I got older that I just kept getting more captivated because of it. Because, you know, I started acting when I was 3 years old, and I started acting after I saw Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs. I thought it was really powerful. I thought his just role was just so captivating, and the way that he would talk to Clarice, and he would just get so engulfed in talking to her. And is your father a farmer, Clarice? Was he a farmer? And like, just how he was just like velvet. Like he was creepy, but so charismatic, exactly how Hannibal Lecter's supposed to be. And I was like, that takes incredible talent. But then I got older and I realized he was only in the movie for 16 minutes. This movie is over 2 hours long. This dude was only in the movie for 16 minutes and not only got nominated, but won the Academy for Best Actor. Do you realize how good you have to be in 16 minutes for people to go, yeah, we're nominating him and he gonna win. You know, there are people who've been in the movie for like 75 to 98% of the runtime and didn't even get nominated, got nominated and didn't even win. And mostly, you know, people would argue that the guy that played Jack was supposed to be, you know, the main actor as the male actor because, you know, he was in the movie longer and he was also introduced first. But no, Hannibal was in the movie the shortest amount of time of any of the main characters, but he was so captivating. So that's when I fell in love with acting, movies, and I fell in love with horror. You know, he was the first guy for me that I was like, yo, this is it. And then, granted, I was born in the 90s, and so I was watching both the Halloween and Scream movies at the same time. And I loved those. I loved those. They got me into the slasher genre, but for the most part, like I said, it was Anthony Hopkins and Silence of the Lambs that made me go, like, this is my genre. Like, I watch horror movies for fun. I was telling Donnie about this, I want to say, earlier this week, or actually a Sunday now. So last week, I was telling him how my roommate and I like to watch horror movie franchises from the beginning until the end. But we also like to say, okay, now where in the franchise does the movie get bad? Because sometimes these franchises will start off with a bang and then it's like, all right, we're going to space. And it's like, no, don't go to space. Oh, why does a leprechaun need to be in space? Leprechaun don't need to go to space.
You got to pick that jump the shark moment.
Yes.
Oh, man. I tell you what. I saw one of the worst horror movies I've ever seen with Don.
In my house.
What was the name of that movie again, Don?
I don't even remember. I'll look it up real quick while you're telling the story.
The first time we'd been invited over to Donnie's, me and my wife, and
Girls with Balls.
What was it?
Girls with Balls.
Yeah. And it was like backwoods hillbillies and volleyball girls half naked being pursued by these hillbillies, and none of it made any sense. None of it.
It was basically a girls volleyball team and the Hills Have Eyes, but it was like probably the worst thing I've ever seen.
But we couldn't turn it off.
It's like a train wreck. You had to keep staring at it.
See, that kills me. That kills me because granted, my time and schedule have changed, but I thought about doing like movie reviews, and I was going to have a whole like section for horror movies. But how I was going to set it up was it was going to be Cinema Sundays, Movie Mondays, Melanin Movie Mondays, and then it was going to be Terrible Tuesdays. And Terrible Tuesdays was going to be movies where I looked at the cover art, or I read the description, or I saw the trailer, and I thought to myself, this movie's going to be terrible. And I started to, you know, get the reviews down, and there was this movie called Killjoy. And there's a franchise for the Killjoy movie. I don't know how after the first movie somebody said, hey, let's make more of these. But the very first movie says, move over, Pennywise. There's a new killer clown in town, and he has it. That was a description for the first movie. And it was... Well, here's the funny part. So the movie was really bad. It was so bad. Like, and I mean, like, the editing was bad. The writing was bad. So much was bad. But the funny part was the killer clown was actually awesome. He was the best part of the movie. The kills he did were epic. He was funny, like you would expect Pennywise to be. But when I say funny, he was like the perfect medium between Tim Curry and Bill Skarsgård. Because, you know, Bill Skarsgård really wasn't funny. He was more creepy, so it was, like, uncomfortable laughter. Well, Tim Curry was making you laugh while also scaring you. This guy was, like, in the middle of both of them. So he did a good job in his role, but it's one of those things where he was the best part in a bad movie. But then they did, like, four or five more movies. And then not only does it get worse, but the last two movies – aren't even horror movies. It's like they're movies about horror, like people who used to be horror villains. Like, it doesn't make any lick of sense. Like the very last movie, the horror movie guy has his own like talk show.
Right.
Like, he has his own talk show, and he invites guests on the show. Sometimes he kills them. Sometimes he cries because they hurt his feelings because they told him, didn't you used to be Killjoy? And he's like, man, shut up. Why are you bringing up old stuff? Don't do that to me. He actually brings on himself, like the actor that's playing the clown. He actually brings him on, and he's having a conversation with himself. And he addresses the fact that the clown from the first movie was actually the best version. And then after he says he was the best version, then they start arguing back. And yeah, it's just bad. It's just bad. So after that movie, I was like, okay, I'm seeing this movie. It's called Girl House. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad, isn't it? And I saw the trailer for it, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be really bad. And it was surprisingly good. And I don't mean like passable. I don't mean like decent. Like, this is a movie I would watch again. Like, this, mm-hmm. it was actually good. And it had a really interesting take. And it also broke a lot of horror movie tropes. It followed some, but it broke a lot of horror movie tropes. And a lot of movie tropes at that. And so I like sometimes when a movie looks bad and it surprises me. I also like sometimes when a movie's bad and I can make fun of it. But then there's movies like that last Killjoy movie, which was so bad I actually turned off the movie and have not gone back to it. I'm like, no, no, you will. Yeah. No, there's the scene that I turned off. I'm going to spoil this for you just so I can save you the time from watching it. Scene I turned off is, for some reason, and like I said, don't go to outer space. When your horror movie goes out of space, you can still leave it alone. They're trying to escape to outer space because the devil is hunting them down. Because the main character has been stripped of his demonhood. So the devil is hunting him down, and they're trying to escape to outer space. And so one of his minions that's supposed to be building the rocket ship for him says, all right, you want to test out the scan? And he says, yes. Next thing you know, he gets forced forward and starts screaming, and it's ah. And he's like, what was that? And he says, that was the rectal scan that you asked for. And he says, retinal scan. I asked for a retinal scan. And that's when I turned the movie off.
Oh my gosh.
Nice.
You know, we were sitting here talking about bad horror films. I'm actually in the worst horror film I've ever seen. Literally.
That's bad when you're in it and you admit that.
it's so god awful. that I'm embarrassed to admit that I'm in it. But it's called Ghost House: A Haunting. It's on Amazon. and I'm this superimposed ghost through most of the film.
He's like Google time. I think he's going to watch you on Tuesday.
You can find me in the IMDb credits too.
Ghost House, The Haunting.
A Haunting.
A Haunting. See, this is why I got you here. This is why I got you here.
And it is really terrible. And it's about people that go to a haunted house, and the editing, the directing, the editing, everything is just horrible.
That's funny. It's actually, like, now you got me typing it in.
It has one star in IMDb.
Does it?
Oh, man. And it's just, oh. It's
a ghost house, a haunting?
Yes. It's on Amazon Prime.
I typed it in. It didn't come up.
Yeah. Ghost house, a haunting. Okay. Now, where can I watch it? Let me know where I can watch it. There we go. Boom. Yep. Watching it tonight. Watching it tonight.
I'm telling you, man, it is horrible.
So you know what? Then this is what you need to do. You need to have me write the script, because you know, as a graduate script writing major, maybe I can help them with the script the next time. I'm gonna be so you didn't write the movie, right?
No.
Now, your friend that wrote the movie, will he be watching this?
Doubtful.
All right, bruh. Even if he was, I'm still gonna say it to him anyway, bruh. The name of the movie is your first mistake. A ghost house, a haunting. That's too many H's. What if somebody got bad breath and they having to tell people the name of this title? It's called Ghost House, a Haunting. At that point, I feel like I just got punched twice. Now I want to fight. Okay, so that's just the first mistake. Also, I mean, I don't know if there's a movie already called A Haunting. I'm pretty sure there's a movie already called Ghost House. You know, so you probably can pick. But you could have just condensed that. You didn't have to do the whole. Because it's a mouth. Would you agree, Donnie? It's a mouthful of a name.
Now that you mention it, it sure is.
A ghost house, a haunting. It's a lot to say. Now, granted, I'm sure you did well. You know, but a ghost house, a haunt. It's so much to say. He would have been better off calling the movie Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. It's just so long. But I know a lot about bad editing. A friend of mine wanted me to do a horror movie with him when I was in college, and he showed me he did a tester trailer before he got the cast together. And when they're like, "Oh, I'm like, so you're gonna finish editing this?" He's like, "It is done editing," and I'm like, "You should never have star wipes in your trailer."
No,
and he also had one that looked like blinds coming up. And I'm like, did you make this on a MacBook, and not just a regular MacBook, but like with the photo shoot effects? I don't think that's a good idea. Okay. He was getting his elementary school movie editing on. I'm like, all right. I mean, you're supposed to be a TCOM major. This is literally what you're going to school. I don't think I want to do movies with you.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And less is more with wipes. You don't need to use a wipe every other scene, you know. And I've seen people do that, and it's. I do a lot of my editing on iMovie, but for the show. But you know, it's not like I'm doing a whole film or short film. I'm just putting together a show, and when I see people do stuff like that, and then just have all these wipes and all kinds of stuff, but. I digress. The film, Ghost House of Haunting, I'm literally superimposed through most of it.
Nice.
Me and my wife. And my character is called Papa Jimbo. He's a voodoo priest.
Papa Jimbo?
Yep.
That's interesting. A lot of people do voodoo, but I don't think I've ever seen them have a white voodoo priest. granted, it's not uncommon. I just, you never see it in the media. You know, they don't, they normally just show some black dude with dreadlocks and red eyes. Honestly, I blame American Horror Story for it. I feel like American Horror Story, they put that image out there. Now everybody wants to be Papa Legba from American Horror Story.
Right.
So, but yeah, you normally just see those interpretations. So that's interesting. That's interesting.
See, the character itself actually came from my hunting background when I was doing haunted houses. And the costume itself is actually made by a woman in Louisiana that has ties to voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the costume's completely authentic, and I don't wear a top hat. I wear a hat that they would have worn, which is made out of burlap and straw and things like that. And the costume in and of itself, I really liked because of that fact of the authenticity of it. But yeah, it's, you know, it is unusual to see a white voodoo priest, but it worked.
6'4", 300+ pound white voodoo priest.
I mean, it's the same way I feel like at times when I see a black vampire. It's like, I'm not mad at it. I just got questions, you know. I'm excited to see it. I just want to know what's going on. What's the backstory, you know? And I'm not mad at all. Unless it's Blackula. Blackula just makes me mad. I look at it now and I'm like, y'all really. And also, I've never seen anybody have facial hair up here. Right. Like, if you see like the costume for it, it's like you got all this facial hair, and then it's like underneath his iris. I'm like, what happened? I'm like, I thought this was Blackula, not the Wolf Man. I got questions.
I remember seeing that when it first came out back in the 70s. It's like, oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, and going back to your space comment, I know it's an unpopular opinion, but I actually love Jason X. And I'm a big Jason fan. That's my guy. And I actually thought Jason X was good. So.
All right. I did not hate Jason X. When I was younger, I liked it.
Mm.
I think as I got older, I was able to tell that it wasn't necessarily a Jason movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was in the franchise, but it was a Jason movie. Because I don't know if you know much about the director of the movie.
Mm.
But he said he had never watched a Jason movie before he directed and wrote it. He said he never read a comic book. He said he just did what he thought Jason would do.
Right.
And so I'm like, well, how can you do what you thought he would do if you never knew anything about? It. Yeah. I'm like, did you just have people tell you who Jason was? And he goes, okay, that's enough. I got it from here. Like, and like, I was asking, I'm like, man, let me try to see the parts where it feels like Jason, it doesn't feel like Jason. And you know, I mean, overall, it has a lot of Jason feel to it. When he becomes Mecha Jason, that's when I'm like, okay. So he just, I'm like, I want to see Mecha Jason versus the Xenomorph after that point, because I'm like, we don't need to fight humans,
right?
And maybe he could fight Predator, you know? I'm like, I want to see him with some actual competition, because Freddy didn't even stand a chance with regular Jason. So I want to know, you know, what Mecha Jason gonna do to somebody,
right?
You know, I got to say my favorite kill scene in that movie was the liquid nitrogen.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes.
And that's a question I got. How Jason, coming from the woods and the forest, how did he know that was going to do that to her face?
See, here's the thing. I don't think he knew. I think he was trying to drown her and then realized something fell off and went.
He picked her up and looked at her.
Yeah, like, what the hell? Get off her face. Oh, she. Okay, cool. That works.
See, that makes sense.
So, Donnie, I think it's time to ask Paragon the question.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, the question we got is, if you've listened to the show, you know what's coming. So we ask everybody. It's a fun question. There's no right or wrong answer. And that question is, if you were the main killer in your own serial killer movie or horror film, what would your go-to kill be?
My go-to kill. See, I'm gonna try to think slasher, because you know horror movies now, you have the different levels of it. But I feel like my go-to kill would be stabbing up like this part of the neck up into the brain.
Under the chin,
yeah, right under the chin, up into the brain. Because I don't know why, but every time I've seen it in movies, I'm just like, "Whoo!" Actually, no, I take that back. No, go to kill, double thumb in the eyes.
Yeah,
double thumb in the eyes. I do that now when I wrestle, and I'm just like, "Ooh, you lucky the ref is about to count because I'm lucky the ref is here." So yeah, I probably say the double thumb in the eyes. It's brutal. It looks brutal. It makes you squeamish, especially when you start hearing the popping and squishing noise. I remember watching it on Game of Thrones, and I was like, "I'm not going to be good for the rest of the week. I don't want to even eat or look at grapes the rest of the week." But yeah, if I was a horror movie villain, my go to would be the thumb in the eyes. I think that's what it would be.
Nice.
So this is the part of the show where we get you to promote yourself, how people can find out more about you, social media, bookings, things like that. So how can people find out more about Paragon?
All right, baby. Well, you can find me on Instagram at the_Paragon, or you can follow my motivational page on Instagram, Paragon Motivations. You can also find me on Facebook as Paragon, just one word on Facebook, or once again, Paragon Motivation on Facebook. I'm on TikTok now. I'm on TikTok. So if you want to laugh, I do a lot of impressions on there. I might even be doing some singing on there. I might even do some skits. I actually do have a few skits on there. And that is the Paragon 23, which is also my Twitter, which is also my Snapchat, which is also my PlayStation. So if you want to add me on any of those, the Paragon 23. And then if you want me on YouTube, you can actually find me on YouTube as Christoph St. James. So if you want to, have some laughs or see some fun wrestling, or if you want to see some poetry or even a promo that might pull at your heartstrings, you want to check me out at Christoph St. James on YouTube. It used to be Paragon, but it's connected to my personal email and it won't let me take it off. And so I would send somebody a personal email and they're like, Paragon, what is this Paragon thing going on? So Christoph St. James, I got some more content I'm going to be putting up there soon. And also, if you want to get some merchandise, you can also find the merchandise links on my social media. So you can get your Paragon merchandise, one of them being the shirt that is behind the shirt right there. So, get your copy of your Paragon merchandise. You know you want it. And that's where you can find me, baby.
Well, see, they can't see the whole shirt, so let me see if I can get out of the way from it. There, is that better?
It's got the top of it. Got the top of the shirt. It's me being a kaiju and stomping through the city and destroying professional wrestlers. My foot's actually through a wrestling ring. Yeah, I had just defeated Godzilla in this picture. King Kong didn't show up. Mothra gave me extra powers, because that's what she does. She gave me extra powers. She tried to get to Godzilla. I jumped in the way. I don't think it was meant for me, but I used it. Paul Bunyan showed up with Babe. I had to uppercut them to outer space. So get the shirt. You get the shirt. All proceeds go to the Kaiju Fund for all the Kaiju's families that were left behind, all the damage that was done by Kaiju's. So buy a shirt, and we're going to rebuild some of these places. Like, for instance, my basement, because I didn't realize I was going to grow overnight, and now my basement's destroyed. So that also helps rebuild that as well.
Awesome. Paragon, it's been a great, great chat with you today. This is one of our better shows. I can honestly say that. Very entertaining, and you are quite the entertainer in and of yourself. And we appreciate you for that. And don't forget to follow Paragon on all his social media. And don't forget to follow Wrestle Horror on all our social media. At Wrestle Horror, we'll get you to everything just about. And you can also find us on most of streaming outlets. So with that being said, we want to thank again, Paragon, for coming on to the show. I am Meat Hook Jim, along with Donnie Hoover. We are the Wrestle Horror Podcast. We will see you on the next episode.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets, facebook.com/WrestleHorror, Instagram at WrestleHorror, Twitter at WrestleHorror, on YouTube at the Wrestle Horror Channel. And you can also find us on our website, www.wrestlehorror.com.